Time for a weekly look at some of the top stories in national politics. Justice Anthony Kennedy announced his retirement from the U.S. Supreme Court today. Reaction is coming into Harley Davidson's decision to move production overseas in response to tariffs, and a far-reaching immigration bill failed to pass the House today despite support from President Trump. You can weigh in on our question of the week at 800-642-1234. What is your reaction to the announcement from Justice Kennedy that he is retiring? What do you think the timing of his retirement says about who he wants to see take his place? What do you want to see from the president in an appointment, from the Senate, from Republicans, from Democrats? What are your hopes and fears here? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Sabrina Siddiqui is a political reporter with The Guardian based in Washington, D.C. Sabrina, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, Sabrina, we had a bunch of top stories from today, and this retirement announcement immediately jumped to the top of the list. Can you talk about the impact of this retirement?
Well, this is going to mark a tremendous shift in the Supreme Court. Now, the court already, of course, has a conservative majority after Neil Gorsuch was confirmed. That was, of course, President Trump's first pick after Republicans had blocked Obama's nomination of Merrick Garland in the 2016 election. But even though the court has leaned conservative, Kennedy, of course, has been one of the pivotal swing votes on the bench on issues that have included, for example, a landmark decision to legalize same-sex marriage. I think that because if you look at Neil Gorsuch, the nomination that Trump made last year, it's unlikely that he would be choosing a more consensus pick. And he has said his pick will be from a short list of reliably conservative justices or judges, I should say. So the question now is the fight in the Senate and whether or not Republicans can confirm the president's next nominee.
Now, the rules have changed some on this sort of thing. Do the Democrats have really much sway on this one?
Well, the rules have certainly changed, and now Republicans can confirm a Supreme Court nominee with a simple majority. Their majority is even more narrow than it was when Gorsuch was confirmed. They have just a one-seat majority. Of course, Mike Pence can act as tiebreaker, but it certainly means they have very little leeway, Republicans, that is, to lose any of their own members. They could only really lose just one senator. I think the question is to what extent perhaps Senate Democrats, given they don't have a lot of power to actually block a potential Supreme Court nominee, is do they find other issues where they put up roadblocks? Do they try and block other nominations or other issues from moving forward until and unless, one, Senator McConnell delays the vote for his Supreme Court until after the election, which he said he's unlikely to do, or perhaps as a bargaining chip for the president to put forward someone who is more of a centrist figure?
People are, Democrats in particular, pointing toward a tweet from Senator McConnell back in February 2016 after the death of Justice Scalia, quoting, "The American people should have a voice in the selection of their next Supreme Court justice," kind of the opening round of his effort to hold off on Merrick Garland's nomination, successful effort, until after the election. This is closer to Election Day. That's not likely, I think, these comments from Democrats, not likely to sway Senator McConnell, though.
Absolutely not. And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell made clear that the Supreme Court will be a top priority and that he expects Republicans will move forward with a nomination as quickly as possible. Chuck Grassley, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, he said he hopes that there will be a hearing within weeks. I think they know that there is very little time before the midterm elections. When you look at the calendar and how much more they have to deal with, they want to certainly proceed as quickly as possible. Of course, there's going to be the obvious question around why was a presidential election year different than a midterm election year? That's the distinction that Republicans are making, is that a midterm election year is not the same as a president who would have the power to appoint Supreme Court justices. I think the counter hearing from Democrats is, one, Republicans set this precedent in 2016, and the line they're putting forward is if we should wait for the American people to be heard in terms of which president or which party gets to choose a Supreme Court justice, we should also wait for their voice to be heard in terms of which party has the power to confirm the next justice. It won't have a lot of sway. I think a lot of it will be about galvanizing voters at the polls, though.
We got a caller on the Kennedy retirement announcement at 800-642-1234. Nate is with us in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hi, thank you for having me. I am actually worried about the Kennedy retirement, and I say that because I look at Gorsuch, who was Trump's appointee lately, and I feel that this was, if you look at this week alone, with the Janus case, an overturning of precedent in a way that would hurt workers, specifically by hurting unions, not in their ability to do politics, but in their ability to actually make sure there's good safety conditions and things like that in the workplace. And on top of that, I believe Gorsuch was one of the people that not just wanted to punt on the gerrymandering case where we've got rigged elections here in Wisconsin, but to actually get rid of the case, which means he doesn't care about what I think are some of our most important and basic rights.
Nate, thanks a lot for the call. Justice Kennedy had voted with a conservative majority on a lot of the big cases this year, but looking over the last bunch of years, I see he's departed from that group double-digit times versus only once or twice for a lot of the other conservatives. So this is, Sabrina, a difference maker.
Absolutely, and I think that in some ways this was foreshadowed in yesterday's significant ruling on the president's travel ban on several Muslim-majority countries, where it seemed as though perhaps retirement was on Justice Kennedy's mind. He sided in that case with the majority and with the other conservative justices in giving deference to the president's authority on the travel ban, but he wrote a rare opinion, part of a piece of an opinion where he essentially criticized some of the more derogatory statements that the president had made about Muslims and people of a certain faith without, of course, naming the president. And some wondered if he was in some ways trying to have it both ways, thinking about his legacy, thinking about when he has been able to stand on the side of equal rights and civil rights, and wondering if perhaps that decision, which was one of his final major decisions, might be viewed differently when you look at the overall impact of his legacy. But certainly, if we go back to just the short list that the president put out, a lot of judges who were confirmed to the federal court on a party line basis. So I think you very much would expect to see another Neil Gorsuch, not a consensus pick like Merrick Garland under Obama.
Talking to Sabrina Siddiqui about some of the top stories in national politics. You can still join in at 800-642-1234 if you have thoughts on Justice Kennedy's retirement announcement. Again, 800-642-1234. For now, though, Sabrina, let's move on to a couple other issues. Harley-Davidson, this is a story with an impact in Wisconsin. They announced this week because of tariffs from the European Union that were a response to President Trump's steel and aluminum tariffs. They're going to be moving some production overseas. We've heard a lot from the president on this, especially on Twitter and in person. What kind of things has he been saying?
Well, the president is arguing that Harley-Davidson is trying to use his tariff policy as an excuse, when, in fact, they had already announced plans, according to the president, to move production, some production at least, to Asia. Now, Harley-Davidson, of course, has said that the president's tariffs, which he announced on European steel and aluminum imports, that was part of their decision-making process. I think this is some of the backlash now manifesting itself in actual practice with respect to the president's unexpected tariffs announcement, which at first he suggested he might turn back on, but has since decided to proceed with, despite opposition from Republicans in Congress, as well as the business community, which of course constitutes a great deal of the Republican constituency. The irony, of course, is that a lot of the impact of the tariffs will affect those who voted for Trump, manufacturing communities in middle America, agriculture and farmers. So where this fight appears to be going is whether or not Republicans on Capitol Hill are going to take some kind of action to overturn the president's tariff policy, or at least to limit his authority on tariffs. And we just don't have an answer yet on that. Some Republicans threatening to do so, they haven't done it just yet.
Here's a listen to House Speaker Paul Ryan of Wisconsin reacting to all this.
I'll say it again. I've said it all the ways. I don't think tariffs are the right way to go. I think tariffs are basically taxes. And what ends up happening is you get escalating tariffs or escalating taxes. One of the reasons we did tax reform is to make it easier for businesses to keep manufacturing in America and exporting overseas. Because with taxes like tariffs, some companies make overseas in order to penetrate foreign markets. That's why we want to lower those barriers.
So that's the House Speaker, a Republican there. But any sign of legislation actually moving forward on this, Sabrina?
Well, there have been some discussions around tariff legislation, and namely it would be to limit the president's authority on the tariffs that he can execute, which at the moment the president has a great deal of power, of course, to enforce new tariffs. Mitch McConnell notably on Wednesday did signal that they might take up tariff legislation. He said there's a lot of concern within the Republican conference. It's something that I believe Orrin Hatch, who is the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, is working on. You've had Senator Jeff Flake suggest that he would hold up the president's judicial nominees if there was not a change in the tariff policy. Today he's facing a question as to whether that also applies to the Supreme Court nominee, to bring things full circle. But I think you're starting to hear more and more Republicans speak out. Perhaps it would be something that is voted on as part of the Farm Bill, which is an ongoing debate at this moment. Of course, anything that Republicans do send to the president's desk would have to get his signature. And so the question would be also whether or not they would be able to secure a veto-proof majority.
We're talking to Sabrina Siddiqui, political reporter at The Guardian, looking at some of the top news in national politics. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Our question this week about the news earlier today, Justice Anthony Kennedy says he's retiring from the U.S. Supreme Court. What's your reaction? What sort of replacement are you hoping for or worried about? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. We continue our conversation with Sabrina Siddiqui from The Guardian, looking at some of the top national political news this week. Let's take another caller on our question about Justice Anthony Kennedy's retirement, asking for your reaction. Cindy is with us in the Fox Cities area. Cindy, hi.
Hello. Since I heard the announcement, I literally am just distraught. I'm physically sick to my stomach. I think Kennedy retiring is the nail in the coffin of democracy, and that we will have a dictator running this country within the next couple of years. It's just totally scary.
Cindy, thanks for the call. Sabrina, I don't know, Democrats reacting maybe not quite as negatively as Cindy, but not far off, I would say. Is that fair?
Certainly. I think that they feel there are a number of issues that could be at stake, and one happens to be access to abortion. I think that it's unlikely, despite political rhetoric, perhaps that Roe v. Wade would be overturned in its entirety. It would be difficult on a national level, I think, for the Supreme Court to render abortion entirely illegal. But there's a great deal of concern if you look at some of the 20-week abortion bans, some of them less than that, 12-week abortion bans that have come up at the state level, that perhaps something like that could pass muster in a more conservative-leaning Supreme Court. Of course, health care, the Supreme Court has on two occasions upheld critical provisions of Obamacare, of Barack Obama's health care law, the Affordable Care Act. Might that change if it is challenged in another lawsuit? There is, of course, LGBT rights. This term the Supreme Court sided with a baker who did not side with a baker, but effectively punted and did not rule entirely on whether or not a baker should have to provide service to a same-sex couple. So these are just some of the issues that I think Democrats are pointing to, that progressives are pointing to. The question really is, because Republicans have so successfully used the Supreme Court as a rallying cry for their base, can Democrats turn that on its face and make this a major rallying cry, both in the midterm elections in November, as well as looking beyond to 2020?
I want to move on to a couple other issues out there. I know the Supreme Court crowded out a lot of other things, but a couple immigration-related stories, Sabrina. Another immigration bill came to a vote in the U.S. House, the Republican-controlled House. It was being called a compromise bill among Republicans. What ended up happening today?
Well, the outcome was not unexpected, that Republicans had failed to pass an overhaul of the immigration system, but it was a far more staggering loss than I think initially anticipated. The president actually tweeted his support for the bill, so it was also striking that you had more than 100 Republicans, 112 to be exact, who did not heed the president's call and support the bill. This was a compromise, though, only among Republicans, designed to bring together the moderate and the conservative members of the GOP conference. And it would have effectively provided temporary status for Dreamers, the young undocumented immigrants who were brought here illegally as children, who, of course, lost their protections last fall when the president rescinded DACA, the Obama-era policy that gave them temporary protections. It would have also provided funding for the border wall, the one the president has called for along the U.S.-Mexico border. It would have limited legal immigration. It would have ended the visa lottery program. So there were a lot of conservative priorities tucked within this. It would have also barred child separation at the border, but essentially allowed families to be detained together indefinitely. So it was never going to have support from Democrats, but it was striking that such a large number of Republicans also broke with the party and did not support the bill. I don't think you would see any immigration bill passing before midterms. It remains just as contentious an issue as it was in 2013, the last time it was debated in any significant way.
And some Republicans seemed a little nonplussed that the president supported it this morning, but not that long ago had tweeted that House Republicans are wasting their time chasing the immigration issue right now.
Well, this has been sort of emblematic of President Trump and his relationship with Republicans in Congress, where he is not at all involved in negotiating the policy details, despite, of course, his vow to be a great deal maker. He is on more than one occasion. This happened also with the efforts by Republicans to repeal and replace Obamacare. He has threatened to veto legislation that Republicans have been negotiating for weeks, if not months. And really, in part, it's because he doesn't want to give away or what he perceives as any concessions with respect to his own agenda. And so it's not clear what he wanted from a compromised immigration bill at this particular stage. The White House never really specified, nor did they put out their own framework. And so I think Republican leaders on Capitol Hill have been very much hamstrung by a West Wing that isn't providing much clarity on what the president would actually sign. And that gives very little incentive then for Republican lawmakers to take these votes, especially in election year when there could well be a political price.
And also on immigration, this back and forth at the border now, the administration's self-described zero tolerance policy of prosecuting people resulting in family separation. What's going on right now?
Well, there are a couple of issues that are coinciding. And so one issue is that the administration, of course, said it would no longer separate children from their parents at the border. But it said the zero tolerance policy would very much remain in place, which in effect is the administration saying anyone who crosses the border illegally will be charged with a crime. And in some cases, they're also doing this with those who are presenting themselves at legal ports of entry and seeking asylum. So there is a dramatic shift in just how the administration is treating those who are seeking entry into the country, whether through legal or illegal means. Now, because of that, they then are detaining these families. Now they suggest that they are detaining them together. Of course, the current law stipulates that children cannot be detained for more than a period of 19 days, although some argue that there is some leeway, there is some discretion the administration can use, especially if any of these families were to have a bond hearing, let's say, at day 21 or 22, then is it really worth being arbitrary and separating children when you hit the 19-day mark? They also have not really indicated what their plan is to reunite the children, the roughly 2,300 children who have already been separated from their parents, to reunite those families. And so there are just a lot of questions that remain unanswered, and it's really not clear if they have even stopped separating some of these families. There have been some indication from activists on the ground that there are very much still families who are being separated and not with a credible justification that those children are in danger, but the administration essentially just using its own discretion.
And Sabrina, before we run out of time, I want to look at a primary result. A handful of states had primary elections yesterday. In most primaries, incumbents in House races are winning. You know, sometimes it's touch and go, but they win. But there was a big upset yesterday in New York. Representative Joe Crowley, one of the top Democrats in the House, lost to a relative political unknown, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Can you talk about this? I think upset is a fair word.
It's a stunning upset, arguably one of the biggest political upsets in the 2018 midterms thus far during the course of the primaries. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, just 28 years old, if she is elected in November, she will be the youngest member of Congress. She is young. She is a woman. She is a woman of color. I think she is very much more representative of the district. If you look at the Queens area, also, it's fair to say that Joe Crowley, who is in Democratic leadership in the House, is one of those who was eyeing the national spotlight, rumored to be a potential successor to Nancy Pelosi, and seems to have lost touch with his district, seems to have phoned it in. But even having said that, I think Ocasio-Cortez's politics, they are to the left of the party. She is incredibly progressive on economic issues, embracing Medicare for all. She's also called for the abolition of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, for free college tuition, for a federal jobs guarantee. And essentially what you have is a young Hispanic woman from the Bronx who I think constituents decided was better representative of the district than a white male from Queens. And now I wouldn't necessarily take away too much and say that this applies to all Democrats everywhere. It's also important to remember that New York, especially if you're closer to the city, is already much more progressive than other parts of the country. But it's certainly a warning for the establishment not to take their incumbency for granted.
Sabrina, we'll leave it there. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sabrina Siddiqui is a political reporter for The Guardian. She was with us for our weekly look at the news in national politics.